This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So former Vice President Joe Biden, presumed candidate running for president from the Democratic side, he was accused of something being treated as a Me Too moment. That feels like some of the implications of the reporting, that he's a little too touchy-feely. At this point, two women have come forward. You just heard the latest update at the top of the hour news from Fox News. And it's really interesting, really, really, really interesting to see the left eat itself up over this. They are devouring themselves because they created a monster in the Me Too movement. What started as a very reasonable movement has now become completely out of touch with reality. We are going to judge someone like Joe Biden, who by all accounts, did nothing wrong whatsoever, but because one person came up and said she felt uncomfortable, well, all of a sudden, I guess we're supposed to just throw Joe Biden under the bus, and I'm not going to do that out of fairness. I'm not going to treat him the way that the left chooses to treat Republicans and now some people on their own side. Now, to be clear, this seems incredibly politically driven. That Bernie Sanders is talking about this is interesting because he himself, his campaign, has been accused of sexism. It would all start because of Nevada lawmaker Lucy Flores writing a report in, I believe it was the New Yorker or New York Magazine. And then she went on CNN's Jake Tapper show over the weekend to say that Joe Biden at one point many years ago made her feel uncomfortable.
Out of nowhere, I feel Joe Biden put his hands on my shoulders, get up very close to me from behind, lean in, smell my hair, and then plant a slow kiss on the top of my head. To have the Vice President of the United States do that to me so unexpectedly and just kind of out of nowhere, it was just shocking.
Okay, so shocking versus inappropriate in the context of Me Too is a little bit different, right? Now, to be fair to Lucy Flores, she does not believe, I haven't seen her say, that she believed that this was some kind of sexual assault or attempted sexual assault. No one is making that point. But they're saying because she felt uncomfortable at the time, this is an important conversation to have because he is now, presumably again, running for president. Now, whether or not you believe any of this, it doesn't really matter. This behavior seems to be in line with the way Joe Biden generally is. And we're going to get into a little bit of the reaction in a bit. But why not just tell him at the time, hey, dude, that's not cool. It made me feel uncomfortable. Now, you could say, hey, you know what? Joe Biden is the vice president, was the vice president at the time. That's not an easy conversation to have. And I would totally concede that. I don't think these are easy conversations to have. But you just went on CNN. You could have just as easily contacted his campaign privately to let him know about this. If this is not being politically driven at all, then you could have handled this a much different way. But she chose to go forward to talk about a story, which then, to me, dismisses this whole idea of, oh, it's the VP. It's kind of hard to do that. It's kind of hard to have that conversation. I would generally agree, but I guess you disagree now because you just went on TV. You went on a national audience. It is CNN, and not that many people watch CNN, to be fair. But everyone is now talking about this, as you knew would be the case. And here's the deal. Should we not treat women with respect and expect of them kind of the same thing we expect of men, which is to speak up? If you felt uncomfortable, you should have said that. There are some people who, through no fault of their own, they're not doing it with nefarious intent, are a little touchy. They invade personal space. We've all had those people in our lives who are close talkers. Close talking is the most uncomfortable thing in the world, and I usually say, as a joke, hey, why don't you back up? You're kind of getting in my face a little bit. I make a joke out of it to tell them to back up a little bit, or I'll back up. There are ways you can handle this. And by the way, I'm not going to say who, but I've done that with a significantly more powerful person than myself who didn't mean anything, weren't trying to make out with me. Claire DeMatis, she's a former senior counsel to then-Senator Joe Biden. She is the current former vice president. This is so confusing. She used to work for Joe Biden. She was on with MSNBC to say, yeah, it's all completely political.
It's about having the conversation. There was a way for her to talk about this closer to the event, rather than 5 years later in the middle of a political campaign coming forward. So it's politicized now. There was a way to handle this one-on-one at the time to clear the air, and that didn't happen, unfortunately.
And I generally agree with that position. Not always, but she's not a reluctant person to come out and speak. She's owning this. Now, it's interesting because I don't know why, maybe because Joe Biden is so well-liked, folks in the media right now are going to defend, are rushing in a lot of ways to defend Joe Biden. They talked about it on The View this morning. Whoopi Goldberg, Joy Behar, Abby Huntsman, Meghan McCain, all decided to back Joe Biden.
In the old days, we would call Joe, some folks of a certain age would say he's a little overly familiar.
Yeah.
Okay. But most politicians, when they're, you know, doing this with you, and, you know, they are. And Joe is a hands-on kind of guy.
Yeah, he is.
But no one, I've never heard anyone, and she says she felt violated, and I have to take her at her word, but it would have been nice if she had turned him and said, you know what, Jay, I don't really like this. Please don't do this. Or, not, Mr. Vice President, I'm not really comfortable with that. Something, because he's standing right there.
I mean, don't say Jay. Probably refer to him as Joe if you're going to use his first name.
Joey.
I think she's generally right there. And this whole idea, because I can see how some extremists on the left might say, oh, well, just because he's handsy and that's just the way he is doesn't make it appropriate. I would agree, but let's also put in perspective what he's talking about. There was this image that went viral over the weekend that showed him, again, a little overly touchy in that his hands were on a woman's shoulders. He was coming from behind, and she looked uncomfortable. Now, she has since spoken out and said, yeah, I was uncomfortable because I was just in front of public, and I didn't want to do it, and I was nervous, and he made me feel not so nervous by this gesture. And granted, people are going to take this picture out of context. This was not a Me Too moment. I am very grateful for all the support that Joe Biden gave me. There's a difference between someone touching you on your shoulders from behind as a means to calm you down when you're nervous or upset or whatever, versus like touching the inner part of a thigh. There's just a little bit of a difference between when we're talking about handsy. And I do think that it's important to at least look in a general sense, when we have this information available, at the context.
I remember when I met him in Florida, before he was vice president, and he was so friendly. He's the close talker.
Yes.
He comes right up in your face and you're thinking, I hope my breath is good, you know? and more important, I hope his is.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he talks close. He touches
he's a
you.
Toucher.
That's what he's like. Yeah. And I feel it would be really unfortunate if we got rid of everybody who was just an affectionate kind of person. Those are nice people, too.
So, again, it's interesting to see how everyone is falling on this particular issue. Now, I think most of us would likely agree, Republican or Democrat, if we want to be honest about this, if Joe Biden were a Republican, if this happened to, say, I don't know, Mitt Romney, even though everyone looks at Mitt Romney and says, this is a good dude. He's religious. He's a good dude. He's highly moral. He would never do anything that purposely makes someone uncomfortable. I feel like the conversation would be different. There would not be any defense on The View. I don't think Joy Behar would have the exact same view. Whoopi Goldberg, maybe. She's been a little bit more consistent on this, but I don't think everybody else on that panel would be. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. That is the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's just do one more clip. This is Abby Huntsman wondering if this was a political hit job, which, by the way, kind of interesting again. When you make that claim, you usually have folks on the left go after you and say, you're just making it harder for women to speak up. You're part of the problem. Not really sensing that on this story.
Is it simply to let people know I was uncomfortable, which you could have done in private? Or is it because you maybe want someone else to win and you want him to have doubts about actually announcing for presidency? I've had concerns about the Me Too movement from the beginning, about getting to this place where you can't have normal interactions with each other. That is to say, like, this one was uncomfortable, and that's her place. Mm-hmm. But are we going to get to a place where we can't shake hands, we can't hug each other because that, to me, was uncomfortable? I worry about that.
Well, let's see how many progressive voices, Democratic voices, liberal voices take that exact same position as Abby Huntsman. Because I've said that for a while now. You have in California on college campuses, and a lot of campuses all across the country that want to push this idea of affirmative consent, which I totally accept when we're talking about a hookup, right? When you're talking about actual intercourse. But when you're leaning in to kiss someone on a date at a movie, you're not going to necessarily stop and say, oh, before I lean in, is it okay if I give you a kiss? Now, kudos to you if you can turn that into a romantic point of the date. Like, hey, can I kiss you? Like, if you can do that, okay. I don't know how many people can do that. And part of the whole dating, part of the game of dating, part of the allure of dating is that anxiety of not knowing whether or not you're supposed to go in for the kiss. And I'm okay if you go in for a kiss, depending on the way you do it. Just don't do it aggressively. But again, on California campuses, a dude leaning in, and by the way, it's usually only against dude, a dude leans in and gives you a kiss, you could be found guilty of sexual harassment or assault on some campuses. That's how crazy it's gone. So hopefully we're going to hear from more people like Abby Huntsman, but on the left, taking that exact same position. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending. Oh, no. Let's go to traffic and see how it is. Don't give me that
Come
look.
On.
I was about to do another story.
It's a Monday.
Let's see what's trending out on the roads. How about that? Don't forget, you can follow us on Instagram. Go there right now. Pop up the Instagram app. Add the screen name Jason Rantz. And you can see us go behind the scenes of the show and some of the events that we go ahead and get involved in. It's a lot of fun. Jason Rantz on Instagram. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrities say the darndest things.
Yeah, and sometimes, though, you give them a big cheer for saying the darndest things. Yesterday, it was the Image Awards by the NAACP. They put them on to highlight African-American entertainers. And the big controversy leading into this event was Jussie Smollett, the actor best known from Empire, the actor best known from faking a hate crime in Chicago. He was actually nominated. He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role as Jamal Lyon on Empire. Now, he ended up losing. But a lot of people going into it, number one, said, okay, this, number one, is a bad look. Bad optics. You're calling something the Image Award that you would give to someone who has a very bad image right now because he lied about a hate crime. And then number two, a lot of people said he should probably step out. I know he's not going to show up, but he probably should step out of contention. He should not even allow his name to be broadcast. Now, of course, he did. Chris Rock was there. Chris Rock, who is at that point in his career where he could say whatever he wants, and you kind of tell him what the rules are, and he's still going to violate it. What channel was this on? Because he dropped the F-bomb as well when he went out there. I thought it was on regular broadcast television, but he went out there. He was told not to talk about Jussie Smollett, which, of course, made him probably want to talk about him even more.
They said no Jussie Smollett jokes. Yeah, I know. What a waste of light skin, you know? You know what I could do with that light skin? That curly hair, my career would be out of here! Running Hollywood! Yes, no, just... What the hell was he thinking? From now on, I ain't never gonna know just you're Jesse from now on. You don't even get the you no more. That you was respect. You ain't getting no respect from me. Okay.
So I'm glad. I'm so glad that Chris Rock decided to take this on. And I don't know if they truly told Chris Rock not to say anything about Jussie. That could have just been the bit. But my sense is you have to address that. You have to address that. I don't know how you don't address it. And it's interesting to see the different perspectives on this, because on the one hand, you've got the host of the Image Awards last week, Anthony Anderson from Black-ish, who I love. His political positions are a little bit crazy, though, because he basically took this position that for the longest time, African-Americans were being disproportionately targeted unfairly in the justice system, that they would be punished for things that they should not have been punished for. And in a lot of ways, his comment was very similar to a lot of folks in the Black community after the original O.J. Simpson trial, where he was acquitted. Everyone knew he was guilty, but they said, you know what, this was about something more. The justice system screwed over a lot of Black people in this country, so we're so happy that O.J. Simpson got off. That's basically what Anthony Anderson said about Jussie Smollett. that, you know what, the system didn't get him, and the system has been hurting a whole lot of people, so good for him. I hope he shows up. I hope he wins. But then you also have some people like Chris Rock who's pointing out this is a bad look. This is a bad look for the NAACP. This is a bad look for the Image Awards. This is just a bad look for anyone who wants to highlight the fact that you've got actual hate crimes happening. And yet you've got this dude who's getting off scot-free, despite this hoax. A lot more people are speaking out against the Jussie Smollett thing than I think the folks in Chicago who are making the secret deals behind the scenes. I don't think they expected this kind of reaction. Not from Chris Rock, not from politicians like Mayor Rahm Emanuel or Amy Klobuchar, who over the weekend also said something. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but first, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Eco scams.
Yeah, this is kind of an eco scam. There's a new bill proposed that is going to potentially ban plastic bags all across the state of Washington, but it's official. We're without even needing that bill. QFC has stopped using single-use plastic bags as a giant virtue signal to environmentalists. Now, they have every right to do this, and I'm not mad that they're doing it, but let's be clear. It's a useless position for them to take. It is a useless move. But they see the writing on the wall. They see what's happening in Olympia. They see what's been happening all across Washington State, from Seattle to Tacoma, banning single-use plastic bags. I believe Edmonds or Kirkland is coming next. They see the writing on the wall. They know they're going to be forced into it. So, hey, let's make this a brand win for the people who care about this stuff and just voluntarily do it first. Now, Kroger, which is the parent company for QFC, they've already said that by 2025, they will phase out plastic bags, but QFC would be the company's first grocer to go through with this change. Now, throughout April, QFC says they're donating $1 for each reusable bag sold in its stores, and they'd be donating it to the Nature Conservancy up to $10,000. So 10,000 bags, basically, that they sell, they'll give $1 per bag up to $10,000. Now, let's be clear about something and why we're calling this an eco scam. We do not have a plastic bag pollution problem. We don't. Plastic bags can, in fact, be recycled. Now, there's a problem with the recycling because it's not the traditional way that you would recycle, say, a cardboard box or something like that. Plastic bag happens to be a little bit more difficult because the plastic bag can get stuck in some of the infrastructure that we have in place right now. And so they basically say you can't really get rid of these plastic bags easily. Fair enough. But Jay Inslee and environmentalists are constantly talking about one simple thing that they can do in changing our economy to a green economy, which is we're going to create a whole bunch of jobs. We hear that over and over and over again. Cool. How about this? Why aren't we creating the infrastructure to build these plants that can handle the recycling of plastic bags? Wouldn't that create a whole bunch of jobs? Wouldn't that be better for the environment? Why is it when it comes to this particular issue, all of a sudden, oh, we're just going to ban the product. We're just going to ban it. You've got right now happening in Tacoma, they are debating whether or not they're going to continue with curbside recycling pickup because of how expensive it is to actually get rid of their recycling. There's this whole issue in China where the Chinese, which basically takes most of our recycling, they're being a little bit more strict in what products they will allow. And that means we have to spend more dollars to get rid of this trash, to expose of this recycling. Why are we not having the conversation about that kind of development of technology? Or even not even new technology, this is old technology, developing it so that we can do this here. Why are we not having that conversation? Why is the conversation, it's too expensive to put it on a boat and ship it out to China? Why are we having that conversation and then saying, well, I guess we're just going to stop the recycling? I thought this was a green economy. What happened to the green economy? What happened to all of us caring about the environment? Okay. Now, why should you be just a little bit worried? Because at the end of the day, I don't care. I'm not that passionate about it. I'm passionate about one thing, though, in relationship to this. QFC and these others, they're making these positions known and moving forward with it because they are getting basically pressured into it. You've got a bunch of environmentalists in Olympia and all across the country who are in positions of power. They are being convinced that we have a bigger problem than we actually do. They're letting environmentalist extremists create these policies. And as a result, the eco-extremists will say, oh, this is a win. Let's just keep doing it. Let's just ban another product. Why is that a problem? Well, because usually at the core of most of these groups, not all of them, but most of these groups, at the core is being anti-capitalist. They think greedy, evil corporations are the downfall of society, and they use their pretend concern, or over-concern, I suppose, of environmental issues as a means to attack these particular businesses. This isn't really about the environment. This is about capitalism. And this is a roundabout way of dismantling capitalism, or at least trying. That's my take. What's yours? 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. That's an Unbetter tax resolution hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for following us on Facebook at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Oh, you're not following me there yet. Well, I take that thank you back. I will reserve it until you do the right thing and give us a like. facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. In the wake of the shooting and carjacking last week in Lake City that took the lives of two innocent people, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin is now calling for a tightening of gun laws. And she's doing that presumably because she has a little bit more detail than we do on the shooter and what might have motivated him. She's making this a point about addiction and mental health problems, which I'm glad she is, if that's the case. We just don't have the details publicly yet as to how this guy ended up getting his gun. This murderer told police that he's a recovering alcoholic. He was drinking heavily prior to the incident, and he actually had no memory of the killing of these two people and the wounding, the shooting at the bus that wounded two others. Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he has a history of alcoholism, if he truly does. I don't know if he has mental illness. If this is truly random, I suppose I definitely believe that he's dealing with mental illness, but I want to know first how he got those guns. Now, maybe he bought the guns legally, and that's what information Mayor Jenny Durkin has to make a comment like this.
We do a very poor job of determining whether someone has the capacity to own a weapon. We've seen time and time again where someone with mental health problems cycle out of the court system, get access to weapons, and use them to kill people.
Okay, and maybe that's how he got it. But we already know the federal law prohibits anyone with a quote-unquote chemical dependency from having guns. And so if that's the case, and he got the gun that way, I'd love to know what specifically Jenny Durkin wants us to do. You can say strengthen or tighten the laws. I don't know what that means because the law exists right now. Now, usually we hear people call for more gun control policies in the same breath, usually as saying our gun control policies, they're so lax. They're not being truly enforced. We want more. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Teresa Mosqueda, of course, was the council member who, while this scene was still unfolding, while the crime scenes were still active, she sent out a tweet, this council member, saying we need stronger gun control laws. What gun control law? We've got one on the books right now that Mayor Jenny Durkin is implying doesn't actually work. So what exactly are we supposed to do at this point? Now, of course, if it's not showing up on a background check that this guy was mentally ill or had a alcohol dependency issue, who's to blame? Who's to blame there? I'd love to know that. Producer Tom actually spoke last week to a gun shop owner locally.
Three of them
in total. In fact, you can check out his blog on it at ktth.com. But you had a little bit of a conversation about this issue, and it's not even the gun owner's fault.
Yes. So Diana Pintos of Pintos Guns, she said when it comes to background checks, she basically said gun shops only know the information they're given. So the FBI only knows what the FBI knows. So if let's say the Air Force doesn't register someone who was dishonorably discharged, mm-hmm. if they don't let the FBI know that, then during the background check, if a dishonorably discharged person tries to buy a gun, it won't register. I mean, it
meaning they're basically relying on the user of the gun, the potential gun owner, mm-hmm. to fill out this stuff on their own. And if they don't, because behind the scenes the system is so screwed up in a lot of cases, they don't actually get that information. Because we usually hear about what are gun shops doing to prevent this. Well, they can only do so much. They can't intuit most of this stuff. Now, some gun shop owners have said in the past, and this happened last year, we did a story about this, saying, okay, there was just something about that individual that didn't feel right, and we denied them, we wouldn't sell to them. But you can't rely on that. And if someone is just chemically dependent. If the chemical dependency is alcoholism, there are lots of functioning alcoholics that you might not immediately be able to pinpoint.
Yes. And by the way, all three gun shops I talked to all had turned away people who just have. So that whole Kristen Gillibrand idea that they just sell guns to anyone to make a quick buck, all three gun shops said they've turned away people.
Yeah. If you want to read this story, text the keyword Tom to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword Tom to 1-800-465-8770, and you'll get the blog from Tom on these gun dealers locally explaining how Washington's gun buying process actually works. Because there's a lot of people who don't quite understand it. Now, Mayor Jenny Durkan understands how this works. I truly believe she understands how this works based on her history as a lawyer who worked within the federal government. So she understands the general sense. I just don't know why people just... Well, actually, I lied. I know. I'm correcting myself. I know why people lie or just sort of just push out this, we just need stricter gun control laws. We need more gun laws. We need to tighten the ones we have. It's lazy, and they have no other response. That's the lazy person's response to anything involving a gun that happens in a negative way. Now, of course, when someone uses a gun to protect someone else, we don't immediately say, we got to make it easier for people who should be legally entitled to own it. We got to make it easier for them to own a gun. You never hear that. Something goes wrong with the guns. We got to strengthen the law. A single mom who ends up using a gun to defend herself from some dude who is breaking into her home, we don't immediately respond to that story and say, oh, I wish it was a little bit easier for her to get that gun. It was too hard for this responsible gun owner to get a hold of that weapon. We never say that. Again, text the keyword Tom to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to his latest blog over at ktth.com. The House Judiciary Committee is preparing subpoenas this week to try to get the full Russia report from Robert Mueller's team. And it seems like the Justice Department is not going to adhere to this completely arbitrary deadline of tomorrow set by Democrats to release this report. Bill Barr, Attorney General, has already come out and said, hey, I'm going to give you the report. It's going to happen in the middle of April to the beginning of May. This is a 400-plus page report. We have to go through and legally redact certain information related to either national security or the grand jury process. We have to legally do this. Now, Democrats know that some of this report has to be redacted. But they also know that, for the most part, polling seems to suggest that the public has turned against the Democrats on this particular issue, that they do believe that it looks like a witch hunt, that they do believe Democrats are pushing for things only to be political, that they do believe now is the time to move on from the Russian collusion nonsense. But Democrats are too far gone, right? I mean, the way that they talk about this, it appears they're too far gone at this point. So they're pretending that this story isn't actually over. And to give themselves some cover, you'll have the Schiffs of the world and the Swalwells and the Denny Hecks of the world go out there and say, as soon as anything is redacted in this report, oh, if only you could see what's redacted. It's going to show you obstruction and collusion. Oh, if only you could see what they redacted, when in reality they redact, like, you know, the phone number of some grand jury member. And they say, oh, if only you could see this. And they will milk that for all that it's worth. They know stuff will be redacted by law. And I love, in all of this, they're pretending this Barr letter that he wrote, the four-page general summary of the findings, they're pretending that this is totally unheard of. Except it was a bipartisan effort led by Democrats that created the system in which Bill Barr is now using. But you didn't know that. Democrats at the time of the Ken Starr investigation into Bill Clinton, they hated that Ken Starr was able to deliver that full report to the public, including all of this detail, very graphic detail of what ended up happening in the several meetings between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. So at the time, they worked with Republicans and they changed the rules to have the principal summaries delivered by whomever is the attorney general at the time. It doesn't mean that none of the report will ever get put out there. They just didn't like the way that it was originally done because the media, and at that time, the opposition party and the Republicans pounced on it. So now they want to do the exact same thing that before they said they were really upset about. Here's Representative Kathleen Clark, Democrat from Massachusetts, talking to CNN saying, oh, you know, we got to get that full report. We got to go the subpoena route.
We need to see this full report. And a way to do it is to be very clear with Attorney General Barr that we are not going to just rely on the Barr report, but we need to.
Okay, just real quick. I hope you guys see what she's doing. And I hope that when someone uses the silly line with you, you can push back at them. Bill Barr is not saying he will not release the report as fully as possible. He is simply saying we have to redact some stuff. He's not saying you just got my 4-page memo and that's it. He's never taken that position. The White House has never taken that position.
See the underlying evidence and the full report from Mr. Mueller. And I think the clear message that a Judiciary Committee is sending is that we're serious about an April 2nd deadline. Of course, we are open to negotiating.
Well, they're serious about the April 2nd deadline, okay. But they're open to negotiating. What are you negotiating? If you're, are you, it's either you give it to us tomorrow or you don't, right? So then you're not serious about the April 2nd deadline. You're open to negotiating. Well, Bill Barr has basically said, because of the level of redaction that might possibly be needed, we literally have to go through over every single page, which, by the way, they're doing the redacting meetings with the Mueller team, with Bob Mueller. He's part of that. They're saying they'll complete that by the middle of April, possibly the beginning of May. He's already given 2 days in which he's willing to go under oath and talk to these people. But that's not enough. This is a scam. Do not be fooled by these talking points and make sure the people around you aren't fooled by these talking points. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword Tom, T-O-M, and we'll send you his latest blog detailing how Washington's gun buying process actually works. If you're someone who already knows this, you should also text the keyword Tom to 1-800-465-8770 so you can get the link and then post it on your Facebook page and on your Twitter feed. Let's make sure people's eyes are on this story as others are trying to push more nonsense because they realize that most people don't know this stuff. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. If you're not following your favorite KTTH hosts on Twitter, shame on you. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you links so you can follow me, Saul Spady, Ben Shapiro, and of course, Michael Medved. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Can I go off schedule for a moment, Producer Tom? I know that we've got stuff scheduled here. I'd like to talk about something that was not originally put down on our sheet of paper.
I'll allow it.
Is that okay? Okay.
But just this once.
So, well, you said that last month and I did the same thing. We have an unusually high amount of pollen right now in the air in this region. Ton of pollen everywhere. It's that season where the flowers start to bloom. And that's really bad for those of us who have either allergies or asthma. Now, I have more of an asthma problem than I have an allergy problem. And I've had asthma since I was 12, maybe 11 years old, something around that. And it's miserable, right? I mean, when you're going through an asthma attack or you're getting the shortness of breath, it feels awful. It feels like something, like a big dude is just sitting on your chest and just can't breathe. It's bad. So over the course of the last week or so, I have been having some significant problems breathing. You can't tell now because I'm seated and I'm not doing anything other than talking rather animatedly. But generally, I've not been able to breathe, and it's worse at night for whatever reason, which keeps me up because I can't breathe. And then it's bad in the mornings, particularly on my walk to work, because, again, you're doing some exercise. When you can't breathe, it makes it worse. So I've got this medication, prednisone. It's a steroid that you take to open up the airwaves of your lungs. And I always keep in my cabinet a sort of jar of 10 prednisone pills because you're supposed to take it in cases of emergency. And last week I decided to take it on Wednesday. You take two, and then one, and then you're out of the prescription. Now, because I've had asthma for so long, I knew these symptoms and I knew how to treat it. And so I started to take it. And when you start to take your emergency backup medication, you generally put in a prescription so that you can refill it and keep another one on, you know, on your person, in your office, in your home, just in case you need it. So I put in the prescription, And the second that I did it, I knew exactly what was going to happen. My asthma doctor's office would call me back and say, you know, before we'll refill this prescription, but you have to come in and we have to see you. Which is the most annoying thing in the world, because you go in and they tell you exactly the thing you knew already, which is the pollen's bad, your asthma's acting up, take these pills until you're done, and then take two puffs of blah, blah, blah twice a day. And then that's it. There's nothing really more that can be done. Except this time, they didn't give me the prescription refill. They just called me the next day. Not even the same day, I don't think. I think it was the next day, saying we'd like to talk to you before we do the refill. Now, I didn't see the phone call or the voicemail until Friday during the show, and obviously I couldn't call during the show, and then they were done for the day. And I end up going online, trying to get an appointment to see the doctor, hoping that that appointment will mean they'll actually refill my prescription. They didn't do that. So I called again this morning. I called during business hours. They said they'd get back to me, and just nothing. And so I sent the snarkiest letter ever, saying, stop holding my medication hostage or I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm no longer going to see you if you can't give me the damn prescription. And by the way, when you send a letter like that, then they start to respond. But it's all just a scam, I feel like. This is all just a scam. Any doctor who does this, I put this on Twitter, and people had mentioned that they also have that situation with some of their doctors. This is a means to get you to come into the building, come into an office, so they can say they took care of you, right? We're just doing it for your health. We just want to make sure you're... I know what my asthma symptoms are. I've had this for 20 years. I know exactly what it is. I know how to deal with it. I don't need to come into the office, pay my insurance company now, the copay, then have you bill my insurance company the $400 for me to do a stupid test where I'm breathing into a tube to find out what I already know. And then as a result of things like this, what happens? All insurance companies end up spending more money than they should, and then we get hit with the bill later because the rising cost of doing business with insurance companies. It just drives me nuts. And then before we go, this is the other thing. I've been complaining about this all day. Why is it when I go into a major hospital or a medical center, in this case, where I've got three of my doctors in the same building, it's my asthma doctor, my dermatologist when I see them, and my general practitioner whenever I need them, why is it when I show up, they always ask me for my insurance card, and I tell them I don't have my insurance card, but nothing's changed? Oh, next time you should just bring it in and give it to us. But nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. And then I go, if you really need it, I can contact them and have them email or fax you the ID, because who carries their ID card with them? I don't. Oh, no, that's okay. You just bring it in next time. I'm not playing by your stupid rules anymore. Which, by the way, once I give you that insurance card that you then scan, you then give me a sheet to fill out the exact same info I just gave you. Okay, I'm done.
What a Jason rant.
It's just unbelievable how this acts, how they act.
That was kind of a roller coaster. At first, I thought it was going to be a live read for Prednisone. And
I
thought you were going to text out the number to your doctor's office and tell listeners to politely but firmly contact your doctor's
office. Be civil.
Be civil, because one person, be that one person.
I cannot be the only person who has these problems. If you're someone who's in a similar situation as me, just at least tell me that you deal with it as well, so I can feel a little bit better that I'm not the only one who's been made to feel this miserable just trying to breathe. By the way, another thing, my inhaler, the specialty inhaler, even with my insurance, $200.
Text contact.
No, don't do that. But you can text us at 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rant Show.